The group makes its way to a remote island in hopes of finding brief sanctuary. Instead, they are captured by an isolated tribe of descendants of African slaves from pre-Civil War days. When they declare Mildred Wyeth free from her white masters, it is a twist of fate that ultimately leads the battle-hardened medic to question where her true loyalties lie. Deathlands 66, Separation. Deathlands Hellbenders is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2005, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan with Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Timberly Chanel, Kate Torrey, Thomas Penny, and Christopher Graybill. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Vocal editing by Matt Webb. Sound design by Brian Patton. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Brian Patton. If you enjoyed Deathlands, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders, available at roadstops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.cuttingaudio.com, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free screensavers, ringtones, and games. Keep listening for a special preview after these announcements. The Executioner, number 305. Point position.
A bientôt, Claudette!
Bolin strolled back across the street, the girl clinging to him. Getting into the club with the girl as cover would make him much less suspicious. But on the downside, she was someone to look out for if a firefight broke out, which was always a possibility if he caught up with the freelance agents, especially if they were as wild as D'Orsini suggested.
So, what's your name?
Mickey to you, but Michel if you're French.
I'm Matt.
She pulled away from him.
Hey, Matt. You do have the francs to get in, right?
Oh, yeah.
They joined the throng around the entrance to the club. From inside, Bolin could hear the pounding of drums and screaming guitars. It was more of a punk and metal club than a dance venue, which made a change, pleasant or not, from Chavez Smith's party. Immediately, he saw the advantage in having the girl with him as she pushed her way through the throng, dragging him with her as she cursed at those around them. They came up in front of the old wooden double doors, most likely the same ones that were in place when the club had been a factory, and were faced with two doormen who looked far more solid than the doors themselves. Both were huge black men who stood more than 6.5 feet tall, with their impassive stares hidden behind wraparound shades. One had dreadlocks, and the other had a shaved head. That was the only thing that set them apart, as they both obviously spent a lot of time in the gym. In cut-off t-shirts and tight black jeans, with black sneakers, their clothes were chosen to emphasize their muscular frames. And yet both of them cracked wide grins as the blonde approached.
Hey, Shell, you've been away a long time now.
The girl shrugged.
Yeah, sometimes I need a change. So you going to let me in? And my friend Matt, of course.
Of course we are.
Dreadlock stood aside and then bent to offer his cheek as the blonde stood on tiptoe to kiss him chastely. She led Bolin through the doors. Dreadlock stopped him briefly.
She's a good girl. You look after her, or else.
This was promising. Bolin had a guide to the club who knew the staff, and probably the regular clientele, very well. Hopefully, Goldman and Ross didn't have the same advantage. Of course, there was always the chance that this was a setup. Security was never 100%, no matter who one was, or what organization one worked for. He had been spotted on the yacht, and perhaps not just by the Countess. The soldier had a nose for trouble, and the girl seemed fine, but caution had kept him alive this far, so he would roll with it. They headed for the bar, the crush of people making the club seem claustrophobic. The club was black in every way. The walls, ceiling, and floor were painted that color, and there was little, if any, air conditioning. The low-level lighting barely illuminated more than a couple of feet in front of them as they moved toward the bar. It was only around the bar and stage, where light reflected from those areas, that the visibility was better. The layout of the club suggested that it was rectangular, extending back some way in length, while the width was narrow, which made the positioning of tables and chairs all the more ridiculous. In theory, it had to have had a small capacity, but the crowd of people suggested that this was being judiciously ignored. The bar occupied the right-hand wall near the entrance, with three bar staff coping with the crush of customers pressing against the counter. Beyond, at the back of the room and down a three-step drop, the stage was recessed, suggesting that the club did widen out a little. This was lit by a battery of colored lights and was occupied by a five-piece band, the drummer hidden by his kit and banks of amplifiers. The two guitarists, bassist and vocalist, were in full view. Those with long hair flailed it around in wet strands, while the bass player's bald head was spangled with sweat that glistened in the lights. T-shirts were soaked, and the singer's bare chest was streaked not just with sweat, but from blood that streamed from his nose. The wild mosh pit dancers in front of the stage suggested how his injury had occurred. Even by small club standards, the band was incredibly loud, and Bolan wondered how he could effectively communicate with the girl, let alone hear any intel that Grimaldi would send. The girl had fought her way through to the front of the bar, Bolan behind her, and had caught the eye of the bartender, who was obviously pleased to see her. He ignored the customers in front of him and came over to her. She ordered herself a beer and caught Bolan's eye. He nodded and handed over the money, then took the bottle, which dripped ice-cold condensation from the cooler.
Come on!
The girl led him past the stage area, skirting the pit, and toward the rear of the club. At the back, hidden from view by the stage, was a soundproof door guarded by another large black security man. Despite the darkness inside the club, he too was wearing wraparound shades.
Hey, Charlie! Let us in!
A large grin broke his face, although the eyes were still impassive behind the shades. He opened the door as they neared, and the blonde took Bolan through into a long, narrow room. As the soundproof door closed behind them, the roar of the band was cut to a muffled thud, and the conversation in the back room became a louder hum.
This is better. At least you can hear yourself think.
Yeah, I didn't have you figured for a headbanger. And there's no way you would have known about this room without me, is there? So, maybe you should be nice to me.
Yeah, why not?
She led him to a table and draped herself over him.
I know what you think I am, but I'm not. I just like the look of a guy, then I go for it. I figure, if guys can do it, why can't I? And I like the look of you a lot.
Bolan suppressed a smile.
So, why don't you tell me a little about yourself, Mark?
Bolan began to talk. She hung on his every word with a sexual hunger in her eyes. He gave her a cover story about being a U.S. journalist doing a feature on the south of France for a possible travel book. He'd spent so many years undercover in one form or another, having to keep his true identity and history secret, that it was incredibly easy to tell these lies. It seemed to the girl as though he were pouring out his heart to her, sometimes telling her something that cut so deep that he had to look away. In fact, although in one sense he hated the deceit, he had become so used to covering his tracks that he was able to be consistent with his lies without even thinking about it. And he used the emotional moments where he had to look away to survey the rest of the back room. It was obvious that this was a private section for use only by a select clientele. At first glance, he was sure that he could see money changing hands for drugs and information. And there were some seamen looking as though a hijacking on the docks wouldn't come as a surprise to them. Whores and pimps argued with clients, and even though it was obviously an openly criminal place, there were proprieties to be observed, as he saw money change hands over the table, but automatic pistols and revolvers wrapped in oilcloth were passed under the table. The room itself was about 20 feet deep, with a small bar in one corner. It was a drinking den rather than anything else, and the lighting was dim but sufficient. He had little trouble surveying the room.
Anyway, I know nothing about you. Let me get you another beer, and then you can tell me about yourself.
That'd be cool.
She smiled at him as he got up and went over to the bar, which enabled him to get a full view of the whole room. And what he saw gave him pause for thought. Bolan paid for the drinks and returned to the table.
Thanks. So you want to know about me? Well, I'll tell you.
The girl launched into a story. It sounded a little too much like a French film to be entirely true, and Bolan was sure he was getting a version that was either cleaned up for him or was the idealized version that she dearly wished that she had lived. As she talked, Bolan surveyed the room. Sitting in the corner with a woman was Salvatore Signella. Two tables away were a red-headed guy and an elegantly dressed black man. The white guy was talking animatedly, his partner replying sparingly. Bolan caught enough of the dialogue to realize that they were speaking English. Ross and Goldman.
Mickey.
The quiet force of Boland's tone made Mickey stop dead in the middle of her rambling tale.
Why do I get the feeling there's going to be trouble?
The soldier had to smile.
Sorry, but it's not my fault. I've just got this feeling, too. Without being obvious about it, can you tell me if you know anything about the Sicilian in the corner and the two guys arguing a couple of tables away?
The girl raised her beer bottle, using the motion to take a look toward the end of the room. She took a long draft, eyeing the men Boland had indicated. When she put the bottle on the table, she leaned across and grasped his hand, looking into his eyes as though they were getting more intimate. She was a good actress. Boland had to give her that.
The two English who are arguing, I've never seen before. I only know they are English because I can hear them. But if they're connected with the other guy, then he's trouble, all right.
You know him, then?
Not that well, but still more than I wished I did. Salvo, they call him. I don't want to know any more than that. The slut with him is Celeste. She works the dock area. I guess that's where he gets his information from.
Boland grasped her hand.
You know what he's involved in?
The girl gave a brief shake of her head.
Only that is a hard man. Even Charlie is scared of him.
She indicated the security man on the other side of the door.
Salvo is frightened of nothing and doesn't think about getting hurt. He used to work security down at the harbor for some rich guy. But next thing, he's hanging about with petty thieves and political idealists. He's into stealing and violence. I think a lot of crime around here is his fault, but I keep well away.
I can't say that I blame you. Now listen, I wasn't exactly truthful with you, but I know I can trust you well enough, and I don't want you to get hurt. Some of what I said was true, but the fact is that I'm in Marseille to try to track down the man you call Salvo. The other two guys are also after him. In a room like this, with the four people involved, it's going to get tough. And I don't want you involved in that. So I want you to go. Walk out of that door, walk out of the club, and don't come back for a very long time. Because people like Charlie and the other guys on the door may wonder about me and about how involved you are. Will you do that for me?
Michelle reached up and cradled his cheek in her hand.
I appreciate what you're doing for me.
The girl stood and walked toward the door without looking back.
Don't waste time searching the stores for the next installment of your favorite series or stories you've missed. Call 1-800-670-5220 and order direct in CD, cassette, or MP3 CD formats. Or plug into Graphic Audio's website, where you can order it in those formats. Or, for accelerated gratification, download it right now for your computer or digital player. It'll be online before anywhere else. You'll also get free screensavers, ringtones, games, and other goodies. www.cuttingaudio.com and 1-800-670-5220. Bye.